We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and I'm here today all by myself. Well, not really, since you're here with me, and I want to thank you for that. Today's show is going to be a little bit different, actually a lot different. I had a wonderful guest scheduled for today. In fact, Susan Bratton, who is the host of a very popular podcast called Dishy Mix, and also the publisher of about 20 different expert podcasts in her own company. And she's something of a mentor to me and a thought leader in the online media industry. And so we will be having her as a guest, I hope, very soon. But today we had a little bit of a change in our schedule, and that's because my mother is having a surgical procedure today. So we needed to have a little change of plans. And what I thought I would do is, as an alternative to canceling Women Are Not Funny for today, I just have a conversation with you. And as you know, I love the sound of my own voice. I've never met a microphone that I didn't love. So the opportunity to just wax on without the aggravation of a guest is a really cool thing for me. What I want to talk about today are three things. Things that I hope you'll find interesting, and I'll try to make them so, but as you know, there are no guarantees. I quit believing in guarantees the day I got my divorce. Here's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about some current thoughts about social media, my current thoughts. Also, my thoughts about web traffic. Now, saying that I want to talk about thoughts presupposes that I have been thinking. That is what I'm going to try to persuade you of. And then I also want to talk about our plans upcoming for the third season of Women Are Not Funny Radio, and to also ask you for your help, giving me some feedback on what we are thinking of. So, first, social media. I love it. I'm a proponent. I'm an enthusiast. But every now and again, and maybe you can relate to this, I just kind of wonder, do I really love it as much as I did yesterday or last week or will next week? Sometimes it gets a little tiresome. And I know I'm not the only one having these feelings, because some of my friends and women who are very good friends of Women Are Not Funny Radio have recently stated some doubts. And let me name names. I'm going to name names. Sarah Robinson, Nancy Tierney, Patty Dye, Michelle Woodward. Apparently Michelle even quit Twitter for a while. I wasn't aware of it because I hadn't been on as much. Sarah Robinson said last night, it just seemed like everyone in her stream was selling something. Nancy Tierney has been under the weather, but she said today also that she had been having a little loss of enthusiasm. And then I read a wonderful interview of my mortal enemy, Patty Dye, and Women Are Not Funny featured guest Patty Dye, who said, you know, she could feel herself just sort of needing to pull away some from social media. So, you know, why are we from time to time annoyed with social media? Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. It can become, as well as highly entertaining, something of a job, something of a burden. And people who take it so seriously and consider it just a channel for commerce sometimes can annoy us. Now, I blogged this week about something I heard that just really put me off. It was a webinar by a couple of very high-profile internet marketers, and it was for a pre-launch and a beta test of some powerful new software that is actually a mobile application. And here is what you can do. It's going to be, you know, really fairly inexpensive for the sophistication that it permits. But let's say for a moment that I would decide to take them up on their offer to be a beta tester and have this product pre-launch. I'd get it at a special price, which is about $100 a month, and it would be integrated into my mobile home. So if I were to speak at a conference, and I'm currently, even though I am a speaker, I'm currently not in the active speaking mode because of health reasons, but if I were speaking, I could stand in front of my audience and say, I would love to connect with you, and I have this new system. Instead of trading business cards, I'd love to have you on my list. If you will just text my phone number, not only will it permit me to connect with you and follow up with you, but I will be able to send you links for a couple of really special goodies. And by that, what they mean is a special report, a special teleseminar, a special video link, right? Those special things that people cannot live without. So I would say to my audience, I'm going to send you a couple of special reports about this. And then as the story goes, the people in the audience, so in love with me from hearing me speak and so wanting to connect with me, would send me a text message because they will all have their mobile phones, of course, so they will just text my phone. What the system will do is immediately, for all of the people who text in, it will create a lead capture page. So they have now become my lead, okay? They are there for me to sell them something. I don't know what it is, what I'm going to sell them, but I'll think of something. You know I will. And so there's a lead capture page, and the lead capture page pulls in all kinds of demographic information that's just available online related to a person's name and possibly their phone number. And so it would tell me their age, their gender, where they live, maybe not their address, but at least their region. And it would also give me all kinds of information about the social platforms that they are involved in. So it would give raw numbers of Twitter followers and Facebook fans or Facebook friends or LinkedIn connections. And when I say or, I don't mean or, I mean and. And YouTube subscribers, so all of the various social platforms that have numbers associated with them, the lead capture page would have those numbers. And the way this was portrayed by the two gentlemen who were trying to persuade those of us listening to join their beta program, what we would be able to determine then is who at that conference, who in my audience would be the most worthwhile based on their numbers for me to connect with socially so that I could have dinner with the the people with the highest numbers, right? You know, as if that is something extremely desirable. And what is really, really, really funny to me is, as we all know, there, and you know, I say this with every understanding that you may think it's defensive when I talk about that my numbers are not terribly impressive. You may think that I have an inability to pull numbers or a reluctance to pull numbers. Maybe I have both. But the fact of the matter is, we also know, I think we all know, I certainly know, and if you don't know, I'm telling you now, it is a very easy proposition to build up those numbers. Anyone can do it, and you can do it with software, you can do it with automation, you can do it with follower bots. And so I just have this wicked little fantasy that someone using this sophisticated system is going to have dinner with people who they've identified as influential, and they are really only fake influential. They just have high numbers because they've used bots to draw up the numbers. And it just seems so silly to me to talk about influence in that way. And it's funny also to me that those numbers can also be kind of a self-perpetuating prophecy of influence, because at some point, if your numbers are high enough and people are assuming based on those numbers that you're influential, then perhaps you become influential in that small way. But it's kind of depressing to me, and also very, very, you know, very silly. So that's one thing I encountered this week that was a little sad for me. Then another thing that to me is just kind of an interesting thing. I have been involved as a member of LinkedIn for almost 3 years, but I've never been active there, and I have not been prejudiced against it. I simply haven't had the time. When I first signed on, I was really kind of surprised at how many people in my law school class were actually members. But it was also the case that most of them, like me, were not active there at all. So I didn't go ahead and link to law school classmates, maybe a few, but even some that I was very close friends with didn't. So recently I decided to become more active in LinkedIn. And part of the reason is I have heard different things from people I know that there might be some potential to help build my audience for Women Are Not Funny through my participation in LinkedIn. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons that it became more interesting to me. All right. Here's something I'm going to try to get you to buy. Does anyone, do you realize I'm kind of an intellectual, or I want to be intellectual? I've talked on this show before about the job, public intellectual. I mean, that is a job description. I really did not understand it or know anything about it until I was well into adulthood. And there was a time that I actually had some business cards made where I proclaimed myself essentially self-absorbed wannabe public intellectual, and what I found was that merely having a business card pronouncing yourself a public intellectual really does not go too far in attaining that career in a real sense. But anyway, it was a good try. But even if I'm not officially a public intellectual, even if I'm just a wannabe, what it means is I have deep thoughts, all right? And sometimes I think about public policy issues. And you may recall or may know, or you may be hearing it for the first time, but I was an executive-level fundraiser for a large National Women's Educational Foundation. So I have a background in fundraising and philanthropy, and I care about those issues, and I also care about them as they pertain to education, both public and private education. So, because obviously fundraising has implications for that. So one of the things I've been thinking about a lot, not a lot, that's a lie. One of the things I think about on occasion is about the fact that so much education has gone online. And given that many people are getting their degrees from very reputable educational institutions without so much as putting a foot on the campus, it stands to reason that they are less connected to that institution than they would be if they were living on campus or living near campus and they were on campus all the time, going to the library and attending classes and going to the football games and all of the things that we associate conventionally with a university education. So my thought is that it would be a more difficult proposition for universities and colleges to raise money from their alumni if those former students had really no real tangible association with the university. And given that, it's something that universities need to think about now, because more and more over the last years, say particularly the last 20 years, they have counted on huge fundraising campaigns in order to fund the institutions, because the states pretty much are tapped out of funds. So anyway, these are some thoughts I've had, and I'm interested in how universities can involve their online students in a way to bring them into the fold and really make them feel like they are alumni of those institutions. So in the course of that, I became aware of a couple of people who are working in that area in terms of their consulting practices and their blogs and that sort of thing. So I subscribe to a blog having to do with the issue of alumni participation, and particularly in an online world, and have been a subscriber for some period of time. And I also had a couple of email exchanges with the person who writes the blog, and with the idea that we might have a conversation. Because in addition to being interested in this subject on an intellectual level, my company is developing some software that I believe could be very useful to universities in terms of involving their alumni in some of the online events that they hold. So this story is getting longer and more convoluted. I apologize. You know, I'll just tell you, I'm sorry. This is not funny. So I have with my email a new application from a company called Reportive, like Reportive. And it's a Foxfire add-on, and it's very cool because it turns your Gmail into something of a client management system. So instead of having ads on the right side of my Gmail, I have information about whoever I'm corresponding with, including their last three tweets if they're involved in Twitter, and then links to their other social media sites. And so I was having a email conversation with this man who writes the blog about alumni issues, and to the right of it, there was his LinkedIn link. And so I you know, as I told you, I'm trying to become more involved in LinkedIn. So I clicked on it and I sent him a connection request. Well, to my great surprise, what I got back from him was a, well, I'll think it over, essentially, a rejection. Another way to call it is a rejection. He said, you know, I just need to get to know you better before I can connect with you on LinkedIn. Now, I thought that was an amazing response because I've had two or three emails with the guy. And also, he happens to be in a field working and studying how to help organizations involve their alumni. You know, to me, the very nature of alumni connections is that you have this very tenuous connection with other people in that you went to the same university. For some, you know, that is supposed to be a connection that you can leverage, even though it's very, very, in some respects, it's a very small connection. Just the fact, if you went to a large university like my law school at Ohio State, over 50,000 students enrolled at any time, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of Buckeyes, and we're all connected for that reason. Anyway, I think if you are a member of LinkedIn, I think if you are in Twitter or Facebook, you should be perfectly free to have your own thoughts and philosophies about how you want to operate, whether you want to connect or not. So I am not in any way offended by the fact that this gentleman takes it very seriously and only wants to connect with people that he truly knows. That is what he said essentially, is he wanted to know me better so that he would be able to refer me. He couldn't refer me, you see, because he doesn't know me. Well, the thing is, that's quite an assumption that what I would have in mind by connecting with someone on LinkedIn is a referral. No, that's not what I'm interested in. And what I was interested in the case of this gentleman, was just essentially to see, as you probably know, when you're connected with someone on LinkedIn, you can see information about their connections. And one of the things that's so exciting to me about Web 2.0 and about the age that we live in, the age of social media, is something called serendipitous findability. And so I, quite frankly, was just interested in seeing who this gentleman interacts with in the whole realm of alumni relations. I was more interested in that than anything. I wasn't looking to him to connect me in any sort of tangible way with anyone. And the other thing that I found somewhat off-putting, to be quite frank, is that he only viewed it as I was looking for a referral from him. No, not at all. I mean, why couldn't he just assume that it would be possible, even for someone as adorable and modest as I am, to also be an intellectual and to be considering these issues about public policy and fundraising and the effect of online education? You know, I'm really more interested in his work from an intellectual standpoint than I am from any sort of business benefit, if you will. So that was kind of a weird thing to me, and particularly since we have continued to correspond about it, and he just won't let it go. I mean, last night I must have sent him three emails where I said, well, you know, this is fine. This conversation's over. You know, I may blog about it. If I do, I'll send you a link. And my idea being that I might write a thought piece about it. But it just shows you what a kind of low-grade public intellectual I am. I don't know that I can take the time to set aside to actually think about it. A couple of other things real quick. Twitter this week announced a big monetization deal where they are selling half of what they're calling the fire hose of Twitter tweets. Essentially, they're selling the content. And, of course, with that information came the reminder that when we are active on Twitter, we are doing so giving full right and license to the content that we produce. So it's a little bit sobering, I have to say. The other thing that has been just kind of wild to me is this new feature of the new Twitter, where we are told that individuals are similar to us, or that we are similar to other individuals. And when this first came up, well, when I first heard about it, I just couldn't believe it, okay? And then when I saw it, I really couldn't believe it. And for a period of time, the same two individuals kept on coming up. One is actually a former friend. Apparently, I'm similar to this former friend. And then one is a gentleman who I did not know, even though I had been following him for a while, didn't know him. I subsequently have made it a point to get to know him since we were similar. But, I mean, lately, this last week, everyone's similar to me. Chris Brogan is similar to me. Liz Strauss is similar to me. All sorts of people in my stream are similar to me. And so I can only draw the conclusion that I'm similar to everybody, which I suppose on some level is true. But that's the social media world where I'm a little annoyed currently, along with the friends I mentioned. The truth is, though, my real-life world is not faring much better. I wanted to talk briefly about something that happened about 3 weeks ago, and it was something in real life that I thought I was going to be able to participate to, but because of my travel restrictions, couldn't do it. I had my law school 20th reunion. Oh, my goodness. When I first heard about it, I said, I have to go. Absolutely have to go. And so I called one of my really dear friends, who is a regular listener to Women Are Not Funny. Hello, Renee. And told her, we have to go. You have to go with me. She was not inclined to go because, you know, the two of us, we have some bitter memories of law school, quite frankly. It was fun, sort of, but she did not think that we needed to go. But I persuaded her, oh, but we must. You know, we cannot disappoint our public. They would just be crushed if we were not there. So she agreed, because she loves me and because I twisted her arm, that we would go. But then once it turned out that I was not going to be able to go, she was totally off the hook, and then we were not going to go. And one of our friends who lives in Alaska, Jane, got in touch with me, and I hadn't talked to Jane in a very long time. And she said, I didn't see your name on the RSVP list. And I said, well, that's not because I'm not going. And then I took a look at the RSVP list, and my goodness, it was there. You know, there were 200 people in my law school class. There were, I would say, about 20 on that RSVP list, and I was very surprised. And Renee and I took a look at it. We were very snarky. Realized that there were not really too many people on that list that we were dying to see. So I really don't know what happened. Renee remarked that about one of them, you know, she said, I do not remember that person at all. I do not recognize the name. She said, I would be a disaster if we attended the reunion. And see, I think she missed the point, because I would not be sad, not terribly sad, if there were people who I didn't remember. I would just be very sad if none of them remembered me, you know. So we didn't go, but the funny thing is we had decided, Jane did go, she came all the way from Alaska, and we had decided that we would sometime after that get together on Skype and have a three-way conversation where she could dish everyone that had been there. But that hasn't happened because there were so few people going that we, that Renee and I even wanted to gossip about. You know, I mean, that is really sad. Another thing that is sad is I kept on thinking, you know, oh my goodness, I cannot believe I'm missing my 10-year reunion. And then I would be reminded, no, it is not your 10-year reunion. It is not your 10-year law school reunion. It is your 20-year law school reunion. Amazing. Another thing, though, that has been so interesting and is related to social media. I graduated from Ohio State Law School in 1990, but I did my third year at University of Iowa. And the reason for that is I moved to Rock Island, Illinois, which was about 60 miles away from University of Iowa. I moved there, moved my with my family there, after my first year of law school. So my second year of law school, I stayed at Ohio State, and I commuted back and forth to Illinois every other weekend. And, you know, had a housekeeper for my daughter, and it was just it was a very strange life. So I went ahead and moved to Illinois and attended law school at University of Iowa for my third year. You don't transfer after 2 years of law school. You're just a visitor at another school. So I was, in fact, a visitor. Well, I recently found out that two of the people that I follow on Twitter were actually in my, I went to law school with them at University of Iowa. I didn't know them, but Dr. Molly Marty is in, was the year behind me, and another guy was actually a first-year student when I was doing my third year there. So it's really, talk about serendipitous findability. Here are two people that I actually attended law school with, and Molly and I had a class together. We had evidence together because we, you know, we remember the teacher and the time of the class and so forth. So that's really kind of fun. But so even my real world life is totally affected by social media. So, second subject, traffic. I've been thinking about this a lot, particularly related to this show, but I have two blogs. One of them is New Media Martini. The other is a brand new blog called Kay Ballard Speaks. The reason I had to have a new blog is because, this is my excuse anyway, but I have developed such an unconventional writing style for New Media Martini that when I want to talk about a serious subject, I can't really do it in the style that that blog has come to represent. So, new blog, and I'm very excited about it because I did some of the coding. And in the very same way that I just pronounce myself a comedian, I also pronounce myself a coder, but I actually did some coding, so it was cool. Anyway, been looking at traffic figures, and I had an email from one of our former guests, Shauna Trinholm, and she said, oh my goodness, look at my blog. And she had done a post about her appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio, and she got, for that post, she got over 6,000 views on her blog. Now, what is really wild about that is she normally, for any of her posts on her blog, gets more like 200 posts or pardon me, views over a period of time. So she was very excited about getting 6,000 views, and she goes, what's up with that? What kind of traffic do you have, Kay, for Women Are Not Funny? Well, here's the cheesy answer that I gave her and that I'm giving you. It's really so hard to know. She said, you know, how many people listen to it? That's the part that's really hard to know. And part of the reason is that I don't have it hosted on a platform where I can really get good statistics about the number of downloads and the number of people who listen to it streaming. And it's all over the place. You know, you can subscribe by RSS feed, you can subscribe by iTunes, and then you can also listen to it, of course, on the web and download it from our site and listen to it on our site. And so I know numbers of people who visit the site. I know numbers of clicks to the site, but I don't know numbers for downloads. And even when you have numbers for downloads, you also don't know that you got to listen. And you don't know when someone starts streaming if they listen to the whole show. Now, my speculation is that at this point in this show, no one is listening. You know, if you started out listening, you've probably gotten really tired of listening to me just blather on. And I, you know, I understand that. But it does make it so difficult to know what our audience really is. One of the things that we do know is that the audience isn't growing very rapidly. We have a lot of loyal listeners who come and listen to the archives. Most of the people who listen to the show, very few people who listen to the show, listen to it live. We are in an era of time shifting, and that's all very cool. I still like to do the show live because I think there's some energy there, but most of you do not listen to it live, and that's cool. You know, in terms of building our audience, we're trying a number of things. We have a presence on Facebook that we're working on. And we have Faith Go, our wonderful production assistant, who's pretty much in charge of that. We have Faith and I are Facebook felons because we are violating the terms of service. The profile account is not under my name. We have a pen name. It's Janie Monroe. And so if you ever see Janie Monroe, that's Women Are Not Funny, and we have a Women Are Not Funny page that we haven't started promoting yet, but we're going to do that soon. One of the things that I wonder about in a lot of blogs and a lot of podcasts have contests, and I've given that some thought. We may do some of that, but it seems to me that contests, while popular, they're mostly popular with people who love contests. I'm not a big fan of contests. So I don't know, you know, what we would like to do is develop content for Women Are Not Funny Radio that would have people tuning in because they want to listen, not because they want to participate in a contest. But I want to tell you about a couple of contests that I participated in the last 24 hours, because I think they're kind of interesting and fun, and they are both contests that are being sponsored by good friends of mine. One is Carla Bernberg, and she is Misfit Online. She has a very, very popular blog, Misfit Online, and she also has a very excellent podcast called Two Fit Chicks. She does it with a partner, a friend named Shauna, who is an Australian currently living in Scotland. And I highly recommend their podcast, twofitchicks.org. It's highly entertaining. These women are very, very good and very funny. And Carla, I've invited to be on Women Are Not Funny. We haven't been able to work it out, but I'd love to have her as a guest. She had been planning to go to Las Vegas and I don't know if it was associated with a conference, but she was going to be running in a race there. Her husband was going to go with her, and they were going to renew their vows in one of the Elvis wedding chapels. So it was going to be a really fun trip, and for some reason it was canceled, and so she had a running skirt, some kind of Lycra running skirt, that was given to her by its manufacturer to wear in that race. And so she decided, since she couldn't go, she would give that as a prize on her blog, which she did today. She offered it today. And what you had to do is comment on her blog and say why it is that you think you should, where you would wear the skirt. Well, I love this skirt. It's very cute. And it looks like, to me, it would be a very good skirt for me to wear to the grocery store instead of a tennis skirt. I mean, goodness knows, I would not run. I have no plans to run in it. But if I wore it in the grocery store, it might look like I were going to run. And I was thinking also, if I were to win it, it would be a lucky skirt. And what would happen is that I'd be going down the aisle wearing my lucky skirt, and they would be so lucky that a bag of potato chips would just leap into my cart. Anyway, that's my dream. It's highly unlikely that I will wear the skirt, but if I do win the skirt, I will let you know. The other contest I entered in was a contest for a recipe book, and this is on Margaret Roach's blog, Away at the Garden. Margaret is wonderful. She is known as a celebrity blogger because she has been on, among other things, she's been on Martha Stewart's show to talk about her blog, and there's a good reason for that. Margaret worked for Martha for many, many years, was an executive in Omnivision, Martha Stewart Omnivision, and was the person who was in charge of all of the gardening books. And so she left that very prestigious position at the height of her career success to live essentially alone in the woods and beautiful place and to garden. And so that's what she does, and she blogs, and she has a wonderful life and has published a couple of books in the last couple of years of her own. She certainly was very involved in all of Martha's publishing projects having to do with gardening. But she is giving away a couple of cookbooks called The Family Dinner. And so in order to enter in this contest on her blog, you had to comment and tell a story of your own about family dinner. And I talked about the fact that when I was a child, we did have family dinners every night, and they were quite lovely and quite elaborate, although I never realized it at the time. And my darling mother, who is having her surgery today, prepared a dessert course for us every single night. So it wasn't a matter of we just had sweets around the house. We had an actual dessert that was prepared to go with whatever our dinner was. So it was a very kind of elaborate meal planning process that she engaged in. And now I'm in a position to realize that that was very impressive and also that she was nuts. And what is also funny to me is this was in a day and age when there really wasn't any such thing as childhood obesity, even though desserts were rampant. So, third item, the future of Women Are Not Funny Radio. It has a future. I don't know what it is. We've had a couple of iterations so far. When my company envisioned this show in the first place, we did so for a couple of reasons. One is we were interested in it kind of academically. Once again, we're intellectuals here. We truly are. We were interested in seeing what we could learn about women and their use of humor in their careers, in their home lives, in their social lives, and particularly how women used humor as a tool, a leadership tool. One of my good friends, who for many years, she just retired, but for many years she was the executive director of the Women's Leadership Center at Rutgers University, told me, Kay, there's really not been any work in that field at all. And my own experience of knowing so many funny women and so many women who seem almost driven by their ability to be funny, I just felt like there was something there that we wanted to explore. It was also the case that my very good friend, Paula Kelly, was looking at becoming more active as a comedian. She is a talented musician and composer, and so we thought it would be a good vehicle for her. So we started the show with Paula Kelly as host, and then we had some a panel. We opened the show with a panel of women. And at first it was women who were amateurs. And then we stepped it up a little bit and we got what I would have to call high-priced talent, even though they might argue that they were high-priced. We had Tammy Jo Dearen, who is a well-known comedian in L.A., who also books comedy shows and appears on the shows herself with well-known top-level comedians. And we had Kay Hanley, who is a wonderful, very popular musician who had a long-term contract with Disney and played with Miley Cyrus and had her own band Letters to Cleo, quite well-known, and she is hilarious. So those three women did the first half of the show, and then we had a guest for the second half, and Paula interviewed our guest. The show just didn't work. Didn't work at all. So we decided that we would not give it up. We loved the concept, and I tried to recruit Michelle Woodward to be the host for Women Are Not Funny. And at first she was interested, but then she declined, and I wouldn't hear of a no. And when she appeared on the show as a featured guest in the spring, we talked about the fact that it's a miracle that our conversation around that didn't end our friendship, because I wouldn't take no. I just refused to take no. I had such a strong vision of Michelle as our host, but when that fell through, I decided, well, heck, I'll just do it myself. Now, the truth is, I saw it as an opportunity, because even though that had never been my intention, I thought, well, it might be fun, and if I do it every week, I'm going to get good. People, it just hasn't happened. You know, I think I may have improved some, but I found it difficult, and my improvement certainly has not been linear. And I've had so much fun as host of this show. I have no intention of giving it up, but I want to try some new things, because one of the things that I realize more and more is that this whole field of webcasting is at such a new place. Nobody really knows what works, but we do know that we have the opportunity to experiment. And what I'm doing now is not exactly right. I've had wonderful guests, and that's been one of the payoffs for me in terms of having this show, is the people that it's permitted me to connect to. A perfect example of this would be 3 weeks ago, we had Gloria, no, it wasn't 3 weeks ago, it's actually the first week in November. We had Gloria Feld, someone I've admired for a very long time, a very high-profile feminist author and activist who is just terrific. And she had reached out to me for the opportunity to bring her message to our listeners with her new book and talk about her new book. And so it was a great fabulous opportunity for me to be able to connect with her and have a conversation with her. And I enjoyed it immensely and have gotten very good feedback from that show. Last week, someone that has been my friend in social media for almost 3 years, Kathleen Ritterizer. How much fun to talk with her, to talk with Kathleen, and about a subject that I was very interested in. So on a totally personal level, it's been a wonderful thing. I had a connection over the last 24 hours with a woman who has a woman's radio show in Maryland, someone that I'm going to enjoy getting to know professionally. So it's really providing opportunities for me in terms of my personal growth and my interest. But it's not going to work unless I can do a show that people will really, really enjoy, really want to listen to. So that's still what I'm trying for. Have a couple of ideas. I've been thinking about, wouldn't it be interesting to do a show that focuses on women who are trying to make it in the field of comedy? That would be great. Then also ongoing, I thought, maybe I'm limiting things too much because I love men. I love to talk to men. And it would be fun to have men guests and have their opinions, have them speculate about the whole issue of gender and humor and whether or not women are actually funny. So that's another thing that I've been thinking about. But here's kind of a problem. My experience has been that people who are professionals in the field of comedy actually are not terribly funny spontaneously. Some of them are. But as a general rule, these people who are so talented at comedy writing and honing their craft and delivering their comedy can't necessarily come off as even lively when you have them on the show. So I don't know. You know, maybe that's the name of the show. Comedians are not funny. I don't know. Also, we'd like to do something that's good enough that we can attract a sponsor. That would be cool. So that we could maybe have some writing and have some more production support for the show. One of the things that is upcoming, I think many of my listeners know that I do have a comedy CD, KK's Divorce. It's the spoken word CD that is the story of one woman's life-altering event. Man alive, you know, I could almost buy a cup of coffee with the profits from KK's Divorce. It's like the ultimate vanity project. I hope in the next year to get that out to a larger audience because it is actually kind of fun and it's actually optimistic, even though it's about something as sad as a divorce. We have another comedy CD that is in development and that we're going to be producing very soon called How We Became Famous. And my partner and co-host in Social Media Soiree, Daniel Thurston, is going to be doing that with me, and we're very excited about that. And Daniel is also a regular listener of Women Are Not Funny Radio. It's quite possible that he is listening to me right now, and he's well into Saturday morning, okay? So it's not Friday there, no, real time is Saturday. But that's something fun that's upcoming. Anyway, what I would love to hear from you is any sort of feedback that you would be willing to give me about this show. It's very interesting. When I was talking about traffic earlier, one of the things you may or may not have noticed is that there is the opportunity to comment on our Women Are Not Funny website. And we occasionally get a comment, but we very rarely do. You can even comment on iTunes. We very rarely get a comment on iTunes. And despite that, though, we do have quite a few listeners. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what the answer is. People listen. Sometimes I get, you know, obviously I get some comments in my private email and I get comments on Twitter, but I would love to have your feedback. I would love to have your help. I would love to hear your ideas. I would love to know if you would like to be a guest. One of the things I'm considering is doing more of a call-in format. So, you know, these are some of my ideas, and I would be very, very interested in hearing yours. But in the meantime, I just want to thank you, everyone who's listening. Thank you so much for your willingness to come by here and listen. And thank you particularly today. If you stayed to the bitter end, you know, what on earth is wrong with you? That's really what I want to know. So next week is going to be the Friday after Thanksgiving. And I haven't decided yet if we're going to actually have a show. I may do a rerun. I may select one of our shows from archives and put it up just to give it a little more visibility for listeners. But regardless, as we go into the holiday season, we're going to have something of a hiatus on Women Are Not Funny, but we will be back after the first of the year. Thank you so much for being our friend.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. You can listen to our replays anytime you please, but it's so much more fun when you're here. So join us again live next Friday afternoon for Women Are Not Funny Radio.